Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus.
Ooh, babe, not much time, babe. You gotta trust me, baby. You can't rush this, babe. It's not easy to go easy. Your breathing, babe. Slow your breathing down in time.
Musician Amy Helm returned to a familiar place for her and for many of us in the region to make her new album, What the Flood Leaves Behind. She recorded in Levon Helm Studios, also known as The Barn, with a cast of stellar musicians. And among her many appearances at The Barn's Brambles in Woodstock coming up this year, Helm will perform at City Winery Hudson Valley in Orange County on July 4th, and The Barn at the Egremont Village Inn in Massachusetts, July 17th.
The sun is cold.
Amy Helm, welcome back.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations on the album. I've been listening to it, getting ready to speak with you. What brought you back to Woodstock to make this record?
Well, you know, really it was the most practical thing to do, both logistically and financially, with trying to get this record made. You know, I've had a wild, wonderful fantasy of somehow taking a bunch of crew and musicians to someplace exotic like Mexico and making a record. But of course, you start to look at the details and you balance your checkbook, and made the choice, the very pragmatic choice, to land in Woodstock, which I was very grateful to have that place to go to. And certainly recording there, which I hadn't done in a long time, was humbling because the room itself is so spectacular. It has such a very particular sound and resonance to it. So the barn, which we refer to the Levon Helm Studios as the barn, it really became a tuning fork in a way of the album. I think that the songs had as much to do with the physical space as it did the performances.
For people who have been there, and I'm one of them, for concerts, what's the setup like when you're actually using it as a studio instead of a live performance?
Well, it's actually a really interesting room for that because, you know, my father and Garth Hudson, who was in the band, they sort of acoustically designed the room. And because of their attention to the detail of that, there are really neat places throughout the room that you can catch different levels of natural reverb. You can catch a different kind of slap back, you know. So there's for people who haven't been there, it's a, you know, an A-frame barn with post and beam and lots of bluestone. So sometimes if you set the drums up in a certain corner, you'll get a little bit more resonance on it. And sometimes if you sing underneath the cupola, you get a little bit more air to the room. So it was a pretty cool set up where we kind of shifted a little bit to get different sounds, but generally right there on the main floor of the room in a kind of circle was how we did most of the record.
I have to imagine there's a lot of feeling wrapped up in that physical space for you personally. Did that add any pressure to the process of making this album?
No, definitely didn't add pressure. I think that it added... Well, I guess, like I said, sort of a humility, you know. It's funny to play I've played so many shows in that room and, you know, really learned to play music in that room. And my bedroom used to be in one of the lofts in that room when I was little. And I think that instead of pressure, I think I felt extra held by it. And also it was a cool thing to have my own history and memory with that room, and then also watch the other musicians that were collaborating on this album with me, to watch them have their own response to the muse that is in that room. You know, it was a pretty powerful thing.
I tried to pay attention to what the album, you know, sounded like beyond just the songs and the lyrics and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it does have that very, I don't know if you would say like a present sense to it. You know, you kind of feel like you're kind of sitting in almost.
Oh, that's great. That's that's all anybody hopes for. That's awesome that you felt that way. It's how it felt when we recorded it, for sure. And of course, you know, we went for all live takes. We also, something that's particular about that room is that there's not a lot of isolation. So when you're making an album, you can't, you know, you're going to have a lot of bleed through the microphones. So the guitar amp is going to come through the vocals just a little bit. And so when you set up, you're really going for a live on the floor kind of sound, which hopefully is adding to that presence that you're feeling when you hear it.
So would you do it again? Would you come back?
Oh, yeah, to the barn?
Yeah, not just for concerts. I mean, would you make another album there?
Oh, yes, definitely. Yes. I mean, I'm still going to keep Mexico as a fantasy in my back pocket, but always the barn. Yeah, I encourage, you know, for some people, for some musicians, and particularly for singers, I think it's a really special, singular sounding room.
I've had the chance to speak with a few musicians now as the world is reopening.
Mm-hmm.
What was the pandemic like for you?
Gosh, I don't know if I'm far enough away from all of it to have a very clear answer to that yet, but certainly it was quiet and grounding in a way, I think. You know, I have two little boys. They're not so little anymore, 9 and 13. And of course, as a traveling musician, I was away from home all the time. So that was the longest that I've spent with my kids since they were born, you know, just about. And I think for a lot of musicians or anybody who travels, that was a common conversation, just how extraordinary it was to be home and get into a rhythm with your family that you hadn't had the opportunity to do before then. And I found that really rewarding. And you know, I was great. I was, you know, obviously, as we all are, any of us who are still here, who made it through, and didn't get sick, just grateful for my health and my family. And you know, I think there was something really, really positive about the stillness for everybody. There's something about stopping that is really, really liberating, I think. I don't know exactly how yet, but I'm still working it out, but that feels true for me and seems true in other friends' lives when I see people, hear them talking about their experience with it.
Were there aspects of being an artist, you know, performing live or getting the chance to collaborate with people on stage, that kind of thing, that you missed?
Oh, yeah, I really did. I did miss singing for people. Just being out this past week and just doing a handful of shows down south, I really forgot how, I mean, there's just nothing better. There's no better feeling than getting to sing and play for people. I mean, I think that it's why musicians keep at it. Even if you're making, you know, $15,000 a year, you're going to find a way to keep doing gigs because there's just nothing more satisfying, really. It's just a total joy.
Now, you mentioned your sons. If I have this right, one of them is on this album playing the drums, or congas?
Yeah, he played congas on a track, and he played tambourine on a track. My older son, Lee, who is deeply into the drums and loves being a drummer, wants to be a drummer, has great music teachers here in the area, and he's committed. I think he's a lifer. He's in.
Are you giving him advice about that? You know, you had an upbringing, obviously, in music as well, but it is a life.
Yeah, it is a life. I am giving him, I don't know how much of it he's listening to just yet, but I do try to give him advice. I actually just brought him on the road with me on this little tour that we just did, which was really fun. And he sat in and played a song every night. And yeah, I'm full of advice. I think he's getting like maybe 2 out of every 10 stories. I'm hoping that they're resonating with him and finding their way into his head and heart. But, you know, teens will be teens.
Well, that's what sticks out to me. Most 13-year-olds listen to whatever the polar opposite is of what their parents like. I mean, he's on your album. He must dig it.
I think he does. You know, he likes, actually, I'm very impressed with him and his whole generation. I think that it is maybe one of the positive things that's come from streaming is the incredible access to so much music. So, I mean, he is listening to everything from Slipknot to James Brown to, I mean, the list goes on and on, you know, Drake and this one and that one, on and on, Kanye. Our playlists are so varied, and it's really cool to watch him absorb all of that as a drummer and then put it into his, you know, into his playing. It's a pretty neat thing that I think may be specific for their generation, for younger generations.
Forgive this question, but can he sing and drum at the same time?
He can. He's working on it. He did it. He can do it, and I'm encouraging him to do more of it. I mean, he really loves the drums and likes to focus on that. But you know, he's got a good ear and he can carry a tune. So hopefully he'll develop his singing too.
In your own life, was there ever any doubt that you would go into music?
You know, when I was older in my 20s, I tried my hand at teaching a little bit, and I thought that I might want to pursue teaching or counseling. And then I just, you know, music really kind of, I have to say that it just sort of grabbed me and took me in its own course at its own pace. I think that, you know, through my father and through other bands that I was in, I just had the opportunity to feel myself getting stronger at singing. And then once I felt the reward of getting better at your craft, I was hooked from there. And probably by the time I was in my late 20s, I was committed to pursuing music as a career.
We're speaking with Amy Helm this morning on The Roundtable. Her new album is What the Flood Leaves Behind.
Turn to verse 23. Read the words written on the page. Take it out on a strange sea. See how far it gets you. There's a sunset over the projects. Each pink shadows out a running. Over the walls and they're burning. In the blacktop neon light. You can have some of mine. For as long as it takes, what the flood leaves behind is what we've got to make. Hey, my mind.
Let's talk a little bit about the title of your album. It comes from the first song off the record, verse 23. Why did you want to go with that imagery, you know, for the album overall, but also for the first track?
I love the suggestion of what the flood leaves behind. And what I really love is the line that follows it in that song, which is, what the flood leaves behind is what we've got to make. And I love the feeling of the promise of building and the promise of resurrection after having things stripped from us. So that was my intention for the title, that we, You know, we find the best of ourselves and our situation, I think, when it's stripped away to the very elemental pieces of it.
I don't know if this was intentional, and maybe it's the organ that does it, but listening to the record, you know, getting ready to speak with you, I just had the sense that it was, to some degree, a gospel album.
That's cool. Well, I love it. It certainly wasn't intentional, but I mean, I think that gospel music has really influenced me throughout my life. I mean, I went through a couple of years where I would really only listen to gospel music, and I sang in a band called Olabel that did gospel music for about 10 years. And I think that Phil Cook, who is playing piano and organ on this album, I know that Phil is also deeply influenced by gospel music, and works a lot with various gospel artists. So maybe some of that rubbed off in the songs.
Cotton and the Cane stuck out to me as well.
Yes, yeah, I'm proud of that song. I wrote that song with Mary Gauthier. Or, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with her work.
Yeah, I've interviewed her maybe two or three times. She's incredible. She's played the Linda a bunch of times too.
Yes, yeah, she's played the Linda a lot. I've missed her every time she's here. She's incredible, totally. And yeah, getting to write the song with her was very moving. It was a great honor to write with her. I think she's one of the great writers that we have. And it was maybe the first time that I'd ever spoken so clearly and deliberately about one aspect of my childhood, and about growing up surrounded by so much addiction. But I was really happy to speak that, because it was such a huge part of my experience as a child and as a young adult. And it felt good to speak the truth and hope that, and actually really trust that a lot of people can relate to it.
Broken noses, backbeats, backseats, lucky charms, false alarms, and up all night, voices in the other room. Mama's prayers and honeysuckle, white lightning, hurricanes, cracked hands. Thank you, ma'ams. Driving rain, mud in the drain, and breakdowns, and the poetry of the poor.
Talk to me about co-writing with Mary Gauthier, because I've talked to some musicians who say, I'm going to bring in a finished product, you know, at the end, and that's going to be the song, play on it or not. And others who love collaborating. What does it actually mean to co-write a song with someone like her?
You know, Mary is as generous of spirit as she is talented. So it was very easy. It was like stepping into an easy slipstream of creativity. Mary and I connect deeply on recovery and have a similar kind of faith in life, I think. And so it was really easy to share a lot of memories and images with her from growing up, and then, you know, and to allow myself to be that vulnerable in front of her, because she does have such a big heart. So it was really rewarding, honestly, to write the song with her. And collaboration is always, I have always thrived in collaboration, I think more so than creating something on my own. That's always, since I was really even a little girl, I just have always done better singing alongside somebody or writing alongside somebody. I really enjoy it.
Do you remember when you learned to do harmony singing?
Yes, I do. Actually, I had these wonderful teachers. You know, I met these three young men who had worked at an arts camp that I went to, and they were living in New York. And every day after I met them, I would walk to their house every day after school when I was in 10th grade. I was 15 years old. And I would walk to their house after school, and we would sit in a circle in their living room, and we would sing Everly Brothers and Beatles and Rolling Stones and all the old 1950s and 60s early rock and roll catalog, and they would school me on harmonies. And they were, one of them, Brian Halverson, was particularly tough with me about it because he knew I was getting good at it. So they would really challenge me, and it was sort of like going to an hour and a half master class after school every day. And I remember falling in love with harmony singing during that year, my 10th grade year of high school. And that's where it kind of began for me. And then, of course, in the band Olabel, which was a collective of five of us, I got to really hone that craft and fine-tune my harmony singing with those folks.
So just one more thing. The Barn is such a great place to go because it's a community gathering spot in Woodstock, and mm-hmm. you know, people come for the snacks, they come for the show. Is there a place in the building that the public doesn't know about that you particularly like or that's meaningful to you?
What a cool question. You know, there is a place in the barn that is the coolest place in the barn and is inaccessible now because we took some of the floorboards out. So at the very top of the barn, up beyond reach with no access to it anymore, is this little cupola area where there used to be floorboards and there used to be an old ladder. And that was my father's favorite place to go. He would climb up the ladder and sit up in this little cupola that was sort of like sitting in a tiny little greenhouse on top of the barn, just surrounded by windows and light. And you could hear everything, and it was just very still and very quiet. And that's the most special spot in the barn. But we took some floorboards out to open up the sound when we put the PA system in, and we took the ladder away. So no more cupola, no more access to that, but maybe someday.
We've been speaking with Amy Helm about her new album, What the Flood Leaves Behind. She'll be performing at the Barn in Woodstock all this year and at City Winery Hudson Valley in Orange County on July 4th and the Barn at the Egremont Village Inn in Massachusetts July 17th. Amy Helm, thank you so much for spending this time with us and congratulations on the new album.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Hey, mama.